Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
So I think you always got to be forward thinking, and you know, as long as you're doing it genuinely. I see a lot of people on Twitter post stuff, and it's great. Like, content's huge, and it's going to help you understand the game at a better level. I think, you know, you can never watch too much film. So I think that's where a lot of managers coming up just try to do their job, and that's great. But if you're not growing your knowledge base of the game, you know, the game's going to pass you.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today's episode is a special edition of our Members Spotlight. Each week, we select four members to be spotlighted and get to know a little bit more about them, what makes them tick, how they got into the profession, and what their career aspirations are. As the saying goes, it's not about who you know in this profession, it's about who knows you. To be considered for our Member Spotlight, simply join Rising Coaches. Visit risingcoaches.com and sign up for a membership today. All of our members get an opportunity to participate on the Member Spotlight. So please consider signing up so that we can get a chance to get to know you a little bit better. We hope you enjoy today's episode, and please follow along with what we're doing on risingcoaches.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new, genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com/membership. That's risingcoaches.com/membership. Boom. I got it. There we go. Let's go. Jimmy Oakman, the legend. The Rising Coaches MVP for the last 6 months. How are you, man?
I'm great. You know, I've tried to take advantage of this time and really just focus on what I've been missing out on during the season and watching, get caught up on film and all sorts of projects I've been trying to create for myself. So try to be productive as possible.
Jimmy, you're everywhere. You're on Zoom more than everybody else in the membership combined, I think.
You know, I never thought it would be that way, but I get so bored. I feel like I have like basketball ADD where I'm just trying to bounce around. So, you know, I tell people we should just have an open room and I'll just be in there trying to talk hoops with anybody. It doesn't matter to me.
I love it. So before we get into like your background, Jimmy, obviously you're with the Long Island Nets, and the G League got canceled for this season and a little unknown for what's next. What's your situation? Are you just kind of on hold?
Yeah, exactly. I think you hit it on the head. I think that's pretty much like circumstance across the league. And, you know, no one knows when the G League season's going to begin. The NBA season's getting pushed back. So I think we're all just kind of waiting. And, you know, I think the most prepared people right now is staying busy and trying to get ahead will be able to hit the ground running a little bit. Still try to talk to the players as much as I can through text and Instagram and stuff like that. So,
yeah, and that's why you're sitting there bored out of your mind, trying to find things to keep you occupied.
I was trying to do some cardio yesterday. I went to the court to do suicides. I think like I'm really missing out. So it's been a wild time.
I used to do that. How old are you, Jimmy?
32.
Okay, I used to do that. Like I'd go to the gym, I'd get my workout on the court, I'd do some suicides.
Oh,
I'm 36 now. I bet it was like 5 years ago that I was like, screw this. Like,
we're going to stop from you.
What am I doing? Good for you though. Keep it up as long as you can. After a while, you just get to the point. I think it was probably when I got married and you know, like you have kids, you're like, I don't have time for this.
That's going to be the case. I can imagine that coming soon. So,
do you still hoop, Jimmy? Do you still play?
You know, we play so much during the season against the guys and act as a scout team and just trying to be out there as much as I can. Like, I love to hoop even with, like, our equipment guys and stuff like that and, like, our team attendants before the game. I love getting up shots. So, love to just be around the game. You know, I wasn't a great player by any means, but to be on the court is something I love to do.
What's the scouting report? I'm going to take a guess before you answer that. I'm going to say you're borderline dirty player. You're a very physical screener. I'm sure you can knock down an open jumper and drop some dimes like most coaches.
You know, I was much like Connor. I was much more of a baseball player. Now, like playing with our staff, I'm by far the worst player. They all played at high levels. So for me now, I just sit in the corner. I back cut every time the guys get pissed off and like scout team and stuff like that. I'm just trying to keep them aware. But I know if I'm open, the ball's going up. That I can promise you that whether it's going in or not, it's going up. So
I love it. You're not shy. Let it fly.
No, I use my fouls too. I'll say that. Maybe not dirty, but I'll use the fouls.
All right, good, good. All right, Jimmy, take us back. Give us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, and how you really kind of got into hoops.
Yeah, so I'm from outside Boston, a city called Everett. Big time powerhouse football program for anyone that ever knew anything about high school football. But I was a baseball player, as I said. I wanted to go to UMass since the time I was young. And I grew up during the Marcus Camby era, and those guys had it rolling. They had a great sport management program, wanted to go there. When I got there, I didn't really know anything about being a manager or anything like that. And, you know, winter break comes rolling around. I started coaching 7th and 8th grade boys basketball in my hometown for, you know, we had like 6 weeks off. And so that's how I got involved coaching pretty early. It wasn't until my sophomore year where I became a manager at UMass. And that kind of led me into my first coaching job. I became a high school assistant in Amherst, Massachusetts. Spent 2 years there, my senior year and the year after I graduated. And, you know, those guys, like, I loved it. Like, I took it so personally. I couldn't sleep at night if we lost. And I just fall in love with it really, really fast. And went to Division III ranks for a few years, went to Division I, and now I'm in the pro ranks for a few years. But that was kind of how I got started.
So did you manage all, like, you started your sophomore year, did you manage sophomore, junior, senior year, or you just did it and then you got that high school job or the middle school job? And
that yeah, so it was literally definitely like all throughout my sophomore and like my junior year. My last year, like, I would just go to the games and kind of be a spectator. Like, I would still be like in the locker room and stuff like that and kind of hanging out, but like, you know, the responsibilities, we practice the same time the team's playing a game. So I'd have to rush back and forth if I was trying to make it work. So the priority was to coach the high school team and be kind of hands-on with them every step of the way.
Who was the coach at UMass when you were there?
So Derek Kellogg took over. Travis Ford was in my freshman year, and Derek Kellogg took over. First-time head coach my sophomore year.
Great hair.
it seems to be a thing from, like, the UMass coaches.
Right, yeah, all of them. They got the great slick-back hair. And
oh, Massachusetts thing, I guess.
That's why you had to go start coaching the high school team, because you couldn't live up to the hair of the UMass coaching tree. So you're coaching the high school team. You're loving it. I imagine, like most people that age, like, you probably don't know what you're doing, but you're just enjoying it and learning on the fly, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Like, and, you know, I didn't know anything of it. I'm just thinking naively and thinking, you just do a good job, you're going to get another job. But, you know, that's not how it works in this business. It's so much more relationship based. And that's when I kind of, you know, it wasn't until I left my second year of coaching high school when you guys launched Rising Coaches and the events and stuff like that in Vegas out then. And that's where I really tried to figure out my network and try to go from there.
Yeah. Give us kind of like the timeline of how that all went down. So you coached high school ball.
Yeah.
And then you went from that to what, BU?
I went to Division III after high school.
Okay, what school was that?
That was Daniel Webster College.
Okay.
And that closed down now, actually, I think 2 years ago, financially. It was shut down. But the head coach that was there, Dave Fosher, was probably the best offensive mind I've ever been around. And I've talked with some great people. But he coached at Dartmouth for 20 years, you know, ran a pretty modern offense at the time. It was like an up-tempo Princeton system that I learned so much from him. And those 3 years I spent under him, you know, that's really the backbone of my development in the coaching world.
Yeah, it's always great when you fall into those mentors that really are good at an early age. It's a great foundation. I'm sure you like, do you find yourself drawing from like his terminology and like his concepts still?
It's literally like our terminology was so different than everybody else. I think of it internally and then I try to like verbalize to other people because they would never understand what I'm saying. But that's how my, like, you know, it's the first language that you learn, like, you know, how you think the game.
For sure. I love it. So you're at the Division III school for how many years?
Three years. Yeah.
Okay. And that's when you came to Rising Coaches, right? Like you came your third year?
It came after my first year. I think it was in between my high school and going to college. I had no job at the time. It was that in between period where I left high school and in between Division III job. That was the first time I came.
Yeah. And I remember you showing up. Was it the very first conference or the second conference?
It was the second one.
It was the second one, right? Yeah. So I remember you being there, and I just remember you being like super eager to learn and like meet people, and you were kind of the same as you are now. You were all over the place.
Yeah, not much has changed, I promise.
You were in every corner of that room, which was great. That conference was amazing.
Yes.
I'm trying to think back to who spoke at our second one. Do you remember anyone stick out to you? I mean, you've been to like,
I've been to like 10 of them, I believe. So, you know, I think they all kind of blend together. I just remember going in there first and seeing everyone with different polos on. And I was like, man, I got a blank polo. This is kind of neat, you know? So,
right.
I was like, what are people thinking about me?
Well, we talk about that now a lot. We try to make sure we spread that message. Like, quit looking at logos. Stop judging people by where they're at, because they're not going to be there long. No. You're not going to be where you're at long. And you treat everyone with respect, because the people you see on the way up are going to be the same people you see on the way down. So
definitely inevitable.
Hopefully you weren't getting dirty looks because of your blank polo.
Hey, they probably don't have the same polo on anymore either. So it's all
no doubt. Okay. So then after your 3 years at Division III, then Boston U, right?
Yep.
Okay. And that was what? Ops video?
So I started as video and like special assistant type title, you know, whatever you want to call it. But I worked, you know, there for 4 years total and ops 3 over there.
And you were determined, like the pro game was always interesting to you, right? Like you.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, I loved the college game as far as on the court and stuff like that. And like I was the type, you know, I could watch any Division III game in the country and just enjoy watching basketball. And it got to the point where I just didn't like the landscape of where things were going, you know, and it was never the goal to get to the NBA. It just kind of worked out. And, you know, I'm glad it did.
Can you talk a little bit about your decision to leave Boston University and pursue the pro game?
Sure. So after my 4 years at BU, you know, the NBA felt like it kept pulling at me. Like, I just want to make this thing work. And, I'm 2 feet in kind of guy. And I felt like, you know, if I'm not all in to BU, it's going to do a disservice to, you know, everybody there. And I came up with the decision just to quit. And, you know, I'm from Boston, grew up there, you know, making a good living, and it wasn't an easy decision by any means to just, you know, kind of up and leave and then bet on yourself, go to the NBA, and went to summer league, try to bridge connections. Nothing really, like, I wasn't expecting to get a job. I didn't want it to be like that. I wasn't begging for a job. I just talked to the people, you know, close to me, and, you know, one thing led to another, and it kind of worked out that way.
By the way, you get your whole fan base here dropping comments. I love it. Everybody from the Rising Coaches community is out supporting you because you've been so giving of your time and your experience. So it's cool to see everybody on here. sorry, I'm just laughing at some of this stuff. And I know we've talked about this before, and I don't know how much you want to go into it or whatever, but one of the things that so many in the college game get frustrated with is, like, you spend all these years in the support staff roles trying to work your way up to coach. But you always get hit with, well, you got no recruiting experience, so like we can't hire you. And it's like when you got to get a driver's license and they're like, you got to show some ID.
Right.
You're like, I can't show ID because that's why I'm here. I need ID.
Right.
It's like the same thing. Like, how can you get recruiting experience if you're not going to give me a chance? Like, was that a big factor in like, you know, what drew you to the pro game?
Yeah, it did. And, you know, talking with Brandon as well before and his experience when he went to the NBA and talking with a lot of other people that kind of made the jump. And, you know, the thing that stood out to me was, hey, if you put NBA on your resume, it's going to mean something at the end of the day. So whether you want to go back to college or not, it's only going to be a positive. So when I looked at it from that lens, I felt like, you know, all right, I make this jump, it works out. If I want to go back to college, I'm going to be viewed much more highly for just that experience alone. But it's such a negative where, you know, catch 22, where like, all right, you know, I'm doing a great job at a great program and, you know, hard to move up that ladder. Like that next leap isn't just like, you know, 12 inches over. It seems like it's a mile away. And, you know, now it's funny, like a lot of coaches, you know, talk to me and ask me for advice in the college world. And like, you know, 18 months ago, no one wanted to talk to me. So.
Okay. Quick break to talk about one of our sponsors. I'm excited to tell you about them. We have a new partner. They're called Fulcrum Tech. Fulcrum Technologies works with teams in the ACC, SEC, Pac-12, and more to solve their video needs while saving them money. Angles, their elite video analysis product, allows multiple angle video analysis, in-depth statistics, and importing and exporting of data and video from other systems, all while saving teams thousands of dollars. Fulcrum's Piston product can give you multiple angle instant replay right on the court, both for officials and for immediate teaching. Send them a DM on Twitter at Fulcrum Tech without an H at the end, so FulcrumTech, or email sales@fulcrumtech.com to learn more. Do more, save money, regain the leverage with Fulcrum Tech. Can you talk a little bit about all the like, people always ask, like, what can I do to separate myself from the pack? Obviously, like, the coaching industry is competitive. There's a lot more people than there are jobs. And so people are always, like, wanting to know how they can stand out. You did a great job of that. And I don't think you did it for this purpose. But you always were doing, like, special projects. You were always researching something. Can you talk about that, like, how you kind of spent your off seasons? And this is going all the way back to, like, your BU days.
Yeah. And that's what I think it comes down to now. Like, I know like Jake and Ashton do a great job with Grow the Game and trying to convey that message to them. Like, hey, there's managers at every place trying to move on. You're always going to be a manager. So what are you going to do to separate yourself? And I kind of thought that way early on. And, you know, you obviously know too, like in this business, you don't make a lot of money, especially when you're starting out and coaching Division III at the time. I decided to write some books and sell some playbooks and stuff like that just to subsidize my income at the time. So it was much more of me trying to learn at the same time where, hey, people are going to get value from this and people really appreciate it. And I realized I could charge for it. But that wasn't the plan, just to make money off of it. It was really to grow my own knowledge and then share what I was kind of coming across. So I think you're always going to be forward thinking. And, you know, as long as you're doing it genuinely, like I see a lot of people on Twitter post stuff and it's great. Like content's huge and it's going to help you understand the game at a better level. I think, you know, you can never watch too much film. So I think that's where a lot of managers coming up just try to do their job. And that's great. But if you're not growing your knowledge base of the game, you know, the game's going to pass you.
Okay. So what was the first book was on the triangle offense, right?
So I did a few like playbooks. I did Butler and VCU playbooks, Florida Gators playbooks. This is when like Shaka was there and, you know.
So were you just going on Synergy? Yeah. Watching all the film and then writing it up on Lucio.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Right. Like I went through every single clip, every single play, every single thing that they did and kind of organized it just to learn like, hey, these guys are doing it different ways, but they're successful in their own right. Let's try to put this together before anybody was really doing anything like that.
So, and then where were you like selling it?
Just online, you know, just on different sites and, you know, getting, you know, 50% of the commission just because, you know, other people hosting it and stuff like that and just trying to make ends meet, but really trying to do it to create dialogue. Like I always try to put my email in my stuff that I publish just so that hopefully someone would email me and we could talk hoops. Like, you know, I'm big into talking with people just randomly about different stuff, X and O's wise. And I'm always trying to, I tell people like, hey, I'll give you my number. Let's talk hoops. So
can we still buy some of those books? Like where can we find it? Let's plug some of the.
No. So the only two that I have out right now are on the Pack Line and the Triangle, and those are on Amazon and Barnes and Noble too. So that's just where those sit right now. I don't do any marketing or anything like that.
Go buy it. I'm sure it's the most expensive studies on Triangle and Pack Line out there.
Yeah.
So skip the Dick Bennett video and go straight to the Airplanes book. And then, okay, so you did the playbooks, and then I remember you also did some studies, right?
Yeah, so I tried to, analytics obviously was really, really big, and it is now, obviously, but, like, you know, the wave was, what, like 5 to 7 years ago, and just trying to be ahead of it, like, I was always big into numbers as a kid, and math came easy to me, so how can you tie in what you're seeing with basketball and dive a little bit deeper into things and studying different things that made sense to me, like, just closeouts and seeing how like different hands influence the shot and periods on the floor and stuff like that. So
you're a big left-hand closeout guy for a right hand.
I mean, it just makes a lot of sense and the numbers back it up. And I'll be, you know, a lot of teams force left defense and there's a lot of merit to it. And, just try to see what works and then dive a little bit deeper and keep asking yourself questions. And, you know, eventually you get to the answer you want to get to.
So I'm a big fan of that as well. So if you contest with your left hand against a right-handed shooter, their contest is going to be right there against the ball rather than like reaching across their face.
Sounds so simple.
So simple. So if you get the head coaching job of not even the Long Island Nets, let's say you get the Brooklyn Nets job tomorrow. Are you teaching that left-hand closeouts or no?
You know, I think the short answer, no, but yes, in certain circumstances where like you have to fly at them, you can only jump to contest. It's going to be to that strong hand. Like, so you're not going to foul them jumping into the shot, but regular defense. I think at this level, it's going to be a little bit different, but high school and college for sure.
You would do it in high school and college?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay, and then I imagine, like, along with those studies, obviously you're learning, but like you said, it's a great icebreaker for somebody, and somebody may see something and reach out to you and start a conversation. That's how these relationships start, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I love, you know, when, you know, young men or women talk to me that are managers or GAs come up through the business and they have something to bring to the table that, you know, I see that they've thought about this pretty deeply. And it makes me believe like, hey, like if they're already thinking about this stuff this way now, you know, who knows what it's going to lead to down the road.
Yeah. You're the best. Sorry. I'm starving. I just
go. Very
unprofessional of me. You are the best at that. Like you're great at building relationships. You've done it all, you know, 6 months here during this pandemic on Rising Coaches. But you're building your relationships through your love of the game.
Yeah.
Which seems to make, I would imagine, your relationships stick a little bit more than somebody who is just shooting the shit. Like Scott Savor says, just talking about the weather. You know, like you're actually talking, like you're, it's clear you love hoops. Like you said, you'll talk to anybody about it. And you love getting into like deep dives on different X's and O's and things like that.
Yes. I think Jay Billis said it last night, like anyone you ever meet knows something that you don't know. And you know, that's always kind of registered with me. And no matter who I'm talking to, whether, you know, you could be an 18-year-old manager at, you know, a D3 school, you could be working for a coach that has this unbelievable teaching point on a shell defense. Like that's valuable. Like bring that to the table and you got to know what's valuable. Like, you know, every coach at every level is a human being. So you should be able to associate and talk to them. And if they don't have time for you, you know, you don't want to be around that person anyways at the end of the day. And, you know, I try to disassociate from those people and just try to talk to people openly and candidly about what's real in this business and just try to be a good person at the end of the day.
Yeah. And you've always had that confidence about you, kind of back to what we were talking about earlier even when you had the blank white polo on and didn't have a job, you've always had that confidence to be able to go up and talk to people. How did you, you know, of course, people do judge you by your logo. That is a real thing, unfortunately, in our industry. How did you handle like people big timing you and things like that? I'm sure, I know you got a good attitude about it now, but I'm sure in the moment, you know, it can be frustrating and hard to deal with, right?
Yeah, I learned it pretty quickly when I was in that kind of stretch from coaching high school to Division III. I was offered two different jobs. Both really would have launched my career really quickly. And I'm glad it didn't work out that way because I'm really grateful for what I've gone through. But they both passed me up. And they offered me the job, then basically rescinded the job because it went to somebody else for, you know, whatever reason it might have been. But, you know, it just makes you look back on, like, don't ever be that guy. And, you know, I want to be a head coach one day. And if I ever am, I want to move people through the seats, you know, like, you know, video to whatever, fourth assistant, third assistant, move all the way up and keep moving people through. And I think that's the right way to do it. And so, you know, never want to big time anybody, never want to be big timed either. And just try to do it, you know, right by your people.
Yeah. Now you got the Brooklyn Nets logo and everybody wants to talk to you, and you're the best. You're the best with that. You have time for everybody, which is why you see everybody on here commenting in the chat and everybody here supporting you and showing you love, because you do, you treat everybody the same, and you embody everything that our organization tries to be about, which is just that. So
I appreciate it like that. Honestly, if I could, you know, on my gravestone, like just being a good person and doing the right way means more than, you know, being a great coach. So
I for sure. It. Well said. What's like, I know you do pick people's brains a lot. What's the best advice that you've gotten in this industry?
Oh man.
Or in life. It doesn't have to be in coaching.
Yeah. The best, like, I know when to talk and know when not to speak, like know when to shut up. And then there's times where you should know not when to talk, just be there to listen. I think for me, especially coming into like a great organization, I think I didn't say any words in any of the meetings I was there, just soaking things in, read the room, get a feel for things. And, you know, if you have something to add, do it privately at first and just try to develop a relationship that way. Like you never want to be the person that walks into a room and just tries to, you know, spout off information. If you're not reading the room, you don't know how things generally work. So that's something I've learned. And different people are different for sure. But I never want to come off as a know-it-all. I want to read the situation, you know, have a one-on-one conversation, and then maybe bring it to the forefront to everybody and to generate conversation.
Yeah, that's great. And in terms of like your career aspirations, Jimmy, I don't know if it's still this way or what, but, you have interest in kind of both the coach/GM title.
I do.
Is that still like, how do you pursue both things at once? That tends to be something like, you know, you're a Stan Van Gundy or something, like you're a legendary coach and they give you the reins, you know, to the front office as well. But you seem to be attacking, which I love, you're attacking it from like, you know, yes, you're a legend, but not at that national stage yet.
No,
how do you go about pursuing both things and studying both and meeting people on both sides of it?
Great question, because it hasn't been done, especially at the G League level. Like it hasn't been. I think that's where I'd have to start doing stuff that way first. I got to be a head coach first before I ever want to think about the other part. But I try to be heavily involved in player evaluation. I really love that part of the game. That's why I loved about college is you can evaluate a player, see how they fit, and then put them through workouts, get them better, and take them through the whole process. In the NBA, it's kind of like, we like this guy, like, you know, not saying this everywhere, but you throw a guy into your team and, you know, your coach is going to make it fit. But being able to evaluate somebody for your system, bring them along, you know, get them better at what you need them to get better at, seems really rewarding to me. And I think that I can really help in that. And I definitely help with scouting some players in the G League, current college players, and just trying to grow that part of my game as much as possible too.
Nothing would make me happier to see you be the first ever G League head coach / GM combo.
Amen. Me too.
Let's get it done.
Yeah.
So for any front office people, any owners out there, I guess we need the owner to get on board, right? Let's get it done. All right, I'm going to flash this comment across the screen and let you, I'm not even going to say a word. I'm just going to let you read it and answer.
Honestly, it's the retreats. And you know, the first one that we did was what, Orlando, and just kind of having that, I think, you know, really showed years of relationship building. And I think that's what this is about. And just to have a relaxed atmosphere where we're talking hoops, talking family, and getting to know each other on a more personal, intimate level. I think that's what I've always wanted in this business, and things like that, you know, really resonate. That's why in the group text, I'm always talking about the retreats. And I think that stuff goes a long way.
Yeah, I would have thought you would have said the Waffle House. Was that with Danny Mills till like 5 a.m?
I owe that guy a lot in this business, so I appreciate him.
Absolutely. Here's Coach. Here's Brandon again. Maybe go the GM route so you can hire some smart.
See, this is why I surround myself with smarter people than me, man. You guys got to figure it out better than I do.
There you go. Jimmy, what's been the biggest takeaway from the last, like, you know, 6 months during this pandemic? We've touched on it before, but like, you've been very, very involved with all the Zooms. You've hosted some unbelievable masterclasses and put out some great content. You've interacted with a ton of people. What's been the biggest, you know, takeaway or lesson or from that whole period?
I think, you know, as coaches, we got to network with people all over the world. And that's something I've really enjoyed. You know, people think the game differently, both from the United States to Canada, to Europe, to Asia. And, you know, we got to do our due diligence as far as helping promote people with different ways of thinking, diversity of thought, diversity of color, and just doing our own part and, you know, growing the game organically and trying to bridge relationships. Just because you're on the men's side in college doesn't mean you can't network with, you know, a D2 women's assistant. And I've tried to do that more than I ever have before. You know, the time kind of allows it that way, but getting perspective from different people at different levels has been something I've tried to do. And I've learned a lot.
Yeah. Great stuff. All right. Last thing, Jimmy, give us, you know, your advice for anybody in the industry, whether they're just getting started or they've been in it for 20 years, what is the key to longevity in coaching?
Shoot, that's a $1 million question. I think my answer with anything basketball related is watch more film. And I believe that, you know, you're watching something, you can't tell players, you know, it could be player evaluation. You don't know how good he is going to his right hand. Well, keep watching more film. You can't figure out this team's tendencies, watch more film. Your team's stuck and you're looking for a new system to implement, watch more film. And so I really try to watch the game as much as possible. I love watching film, breaking stuff down. And, you know, for younger men and women come up in the business right now, like you need to be watching as much as you can, because, you know, you can be great with people. And like they always say, that's a skill, but every high level coach is a mastermind when it comes to X's and O's. The X's and O's are never going to be any, like, disappear. And, you know, your character and your personality is who that, you know, it's already kind of built in, but you can always grow your X and O's database, and knowledge of the game is, you know, going to get you far in this business.
Great stuff, Jimmy. One more comment here from Brian Burton. Absolutely. You're a beast and ambassador of the game. Very true. Jimmy, we appreciate you, man, so much. Rising Coaches, You are Rising Coaches. No way we grow and develop through the years into what we are today without you, your leadership, your willingness to give back, connect on a genuine level, and just never stop learning. I think that's super evident just from what you said. Obviously, you know, you're always looking to learn and find out new things. So we appreciate you, Jimmy, so much, and thanks for being on today.
Adam, appreciate it as always, man. Thank you. If you need anything, let me know.
What's up, podcast fans? I want to share some information about one of our partners, Lucio Sports. The team at Lucio has built an integrated platform of coaching productivity and player development apps that are being used by some of the best basketball programs around the globe, helping everyone from NBA champions to youth development academies. Their innovative and competitive memorization games make it so much easier for new players and staff members to remotely get caught up to speed. With animated playbooks, drill libraries, player development planning and monitoring, engaging game plans and scouting reports, predictive play drawing, their content services team, and more, Lucio Sports has got you covered. From players to coaches to support staff and executives, use Lucio Sports to securely keep everyone in your organization on the same page with simple on-demand access to your team's entire knowledge base. For more information, check out luciosports.com. That's LUCEO sports.com.